I'm Jane Johnson. I started the Careering into Motherhood community for women who want a career as well as a family. I'd seen too many women leave careers and jobs that they loved because it didn't seem possible to fit it all in around childcare. I want motherhood and ambition to happily coexist. On our Facebook group, Careering into Motherhood, we've got 6,500 women now, and it's all about support, advice, and jobs. Our masterclasses and online workshops give mums the skills to build and remain in fulfilling careers. For more details on all of our upcoming programmes, including career coaching and CV writing, using LinkedIn with purpose, email me, jane@careeringintomotherhood.com. This episode is something a bit different. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke to Jill Whitty Collins about the premise of her book, Why Men Win at Work. Jill covers a lot of the issues that I'm sure too many of us have probably experienced. And she does include a list, like an action plan of implementable things to address these issues. But obviously, the title of Jill's book is quite all-encompassing. By talking about men, it assumes that 50% of the population are all in the same demographic. A lot of the previous episodes of this podcast have come from an assumption that actually women can also win. But the pandemic is changing things faster than we can almost keep up with and throwing fresh challenges in all of our way. So I also wanted to talk to Amy Shepherd, Careering into Motherhood's resident career coach, about some of the nuances that she sees through her work when it comes to helping women win at work and giving clients practical advice and implementable techniques. So have a listen and let me know what you think. Amy, obviously you are a career coach and you specialise in flexible working and working with women, and you've got a lot of experience of working with mothers. Jill, whom I've interviewed, who wrote this book, talks a lot about women who, as we grow up, we may have very, very supportive fathers or parents who never really talk to us about the challenges that we might face when we get into the workplace.
It wasn't something that I saw until much, much later. And I think, you know, it's interesting because in some ways our fathers, our parents did us a massive favor by making us feel that, right? That feeling of, well, it wouldn't even occur to me to question that I couldn't do something or to question that I'm not equal to a boy or a man. They gave us an enormous amount of power by making us feel that. And I wouldn't change that for the world. However, the one downside of it is you're not ready for it when it does hit you, because you do feel, you know, as I say, one of those women who kind of is looking around thinking, well, it's not really holding me back so far. So what, you know, I'm not really sure, you know, what the problem is. And then when you do start to see it, and whatever moment that is as a woman, and I believe that there is a moment when every woman, if she keeps going, she will reach that moment.
I'm really interested in this idea that career coaching now more than ever seems to be really focused, or the demand seems to be really coming from women. And I'd just be interested in your perspectives around why you think that is, why that could be, and whether you also are seeing this idea that women are sold a vision, you can have it all, and then we almost come crashing down that when we realize, actually, shit, we can't.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jane. So I am a career coach specializing in supporting women and supporting flexible working. So obviously I have quite a niche perspective of this in that sense, but certainly I work with women and men in terms of performing to the maximum in their careers and so on. But a lot of the women that I do work with as clients are searching for that balance, I suppose, to try and have it all. And my view is very much that maybe you can have it all if you're very clear on what all means for you. So it totally depends on what you're looking for. So in terms of flexible working, I think if you're very clear on what will make the biggest difference for you and you're very happy to have open discussions with your employer, I really do think it is possible to make some very meaningful, sometimes small but impactful changes that absolutely do mean that you feel you're edging towards having it all. So, for example, is it important to you that you can drop your kids off at school once or twice a week? Is it important that you can collect them once a week? Is it important that you have time to do some sort of hobby or another interest that actually you might be able to slot alongside your work? And actually, if you have some very specific ideas that you can then talk to your employer about, things that are really important to you. We know from my own experience, but also from research, that women are very, very happy to go the extra mile if they feel their employers are giving them a chance when it comes to making sure that flexible working can work for them. And I think that's why we're seeing this uptake in a lot of career coaching, specifically, you know, by women who are thinking, how do I make sure that I can, you know, have this meaningful and impactful career that's really important to me, that I want to keep building because that's important to me and it probably makes me a better mother and a better person, you know, contributing to society and so on. How can I do that whilst also getting that balance that works for me? And I think if you're happy to have those really open conversations with your employer, quite often you'll find that employers are happy to be flexible in return. It doesn't have to be this big contractual change where you have to go down to 3 days a week. It might just be that a bit of give and take is often all that's required, and you are more than happy, therefore, to go that extra mile in order to make that arrangement work.
And slightly leading question, but obviously having the conversation with your employer is one half of the equation. Obviously, there perhaps needs to be a conversation domestically as well, because if you want to have it all, which is an awful phrase, but if you want to be satisfied, let's change it to that in life, whether that's work and career and at home, there obviously needs to be a conversation at home as well.
Yes, definitely. I think it's about being really honest and having those brutally honest discussions with whoever you live with, so with your partner or husband or so on, about how can we make this work for us as a family? Because as we all know, there's a lot more to life than just work and kids. So actually, how is running the house, making sure that everybody's in the right place at the right time, making sure that we can both attend the meetings we need to. And that's especially important now that COVID restrictions are kicking in. Lots of people aren't going to the office and so on, which sometimes makes it easier. But in other times, I think it can make it a bit harder because our meetings tend to bleed out a little bit from the 9 to 5 because there's no commuting time involved. Or quite often, as in my experience, we've already had a 2-week period of self-isolation, you know, through my daughter's school. So my daughter was around for 2 weeks doing more homeschooling. And that's on top of the lockdown homeschooling. So I think all of those things make it quite an uncertain time for planning our work, for having to have those really open conversations with your partner about how we're going to make sure that we can both prioritise the things that are important.
Leading on from that, so nicely, Jill has a thing she talks about, the umbrella theory.
They know that it's not enough to just do the job under the umbrella. They know that you have to make your work visible, but also make yourself visible, because, you know, there's the whole concept of performance currency and relationship currency. When somebody makes a decision about who to give a big job to, usually a job that's going to be working with them, it's probably very important to them that job is well done. They are not just making that decision with, you know, a very objective, brain-led, let me look at a side-by-side comparison of these people's results. They are making a human decision, and human decisions are based on relationships. And people don't just need to know our work. They also need to know us. And that's extremely, and I think this is one of the key reasons, it's not the only one, but it is one of the key reasons why men win at work. You know, they say women will often skip lunch because they've often got so much they've got to get done before they get out of the door, and in many instances have family responsibilities to get out of the door for. Men know that lunch is the most important meeting of the day.
obviously with COVID and not being in the office, not being as easy to build those relationships, what kind of tools or advice can you give people about building better relationships in order to be seen and to drive that visibility? I know it's something that a lot of women deal with. It's like, well, hang on a sec, I do that job. I put in just as many hours, if not more, but it never seems to get noticed. And I think that's even more accentuated when you're not able to just pop out for lunch with a colleague or a boss, or you're not able to just go for a coffee or have some water cooler chat. Do you have any tactics or practical techniques and advice that you offer people around visibility?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I actually did an event in International Women's Week this year about this, and it was one of our very last sort of face-to-face workshops before COVID struck. And of course, the world turned upside down. And I think it was hard before to drive our visibility. It's probably even harder now that we're all working on Teams and Zoom and so on. But it absolutely is possible. And for me, it's about driving your visibility with the right people. So very much sort of quality, not quantity. So, you know, who is it important to really be in front of, even if that's only via Zoom? Who can you create those water cooler moments with? Who can you invite for a virtual coffee, for example? You've talked on the podcast before around sponsorship in the past. So who can really be that sponsor for you, or a mentor, or just a role model, and they can help make the politics of office life work for you? And now, I mean, I hate the word politics because that makes it sound like you're climbing the greasy pole. And in fact, for me, it's about making those politics work for you in a way that's authentic for you. So I remember the Obama administration talked about shine theory, which is where the women in the room in these really high profile meetings, the women in the room actually found that it was more beneficial for all of them to shine a light, a real positive light, on all of the other women's ideas and to lift as you climb. You've talked about that before as well on the podcast and so on. So lift as you climb rather than kind of fighting for airtime in these meetings, actually to shine this very positive light and building on other people's ideas. And I think there are certainly things we can do in this Zoom age. So, you know, how can you recreate those moments of serendipity, essentially, where you're not just bumping into somebody as you walk to go and get a coffee, but what can you get involved in? So, yes, it might be putting yourself forward for projects and so on. Of course, that's a really obvious one, making your boss or your mentor really aware of what you're keen to get involved in, where your strengths are, what your development areas are, the things that you really want to work on, because you know that that's a gap that might be, you know, preventing you from getting to the next step. So I think that's really important. But almost as important, I think, as sort of getting involved in the network. So could you be part of the women's network? Could you be part of a parents' network? And I was talking to a friend recently who's head of one of these networks for a big bank, and she was talking about intersectionality, which is essentially, yes, I'm a woman, but I'm also a parent. So you might want to be part of several networks. In fact, should we really have 2, 3, 4, 5 different networks anyway, or is it more about that collaboration? But who can you collaborate with to make sure that you are getting noticed, to drive that visibility? And I listened to this Radio 4 interview a few weeks ago by someone called Jessica Pan, and she said something that really resonated, which is nobody waves, but everybody waves back. And I think we can really apply that in this area of driving your own sort of visibility internally. What can I just suggest? Who can I suggest having a virtual coffee to? What can I do that I'm really passionate about that either is, you know, 100% part of my job or actually might be on top of my job? So getting involved in the new project or arranging a virtual team event or something, you know, or arranging a virtual fundraiser even, you know, all of this really raises your profile. Now that people aren't seeing you around the office quite so much, if at all, you know, what else can you do to really get your name out there and get noticed?
Yeah. And again, this leads on to another point that Jill makes in the book.
I was also optimistic because a lot of people are working from home. There would be less of this networking dynamic and less of this meeting dynamic, which men tend to, I talk about giving good meeting. They tend to do this very, very well. But in reality, we've largely just seen it translate into men doing Zoom better than women, and women in general struggling. The women who found it difficult to cut into the conversation in the meeting when the meeting was live, finding it even harder to do that when the meeting's on video.
And so your point just earlier about, you know, finding ways of reaching out to people and having a virtual coffee or whatever it might be, that takes confidence in the same way that cutting in across someone or saying, excuse me, I have a point to make on a Zoom call, that takes a real innate confidence. I know it's something, again, Amy, that you're really passionate about in one of your big coaching programs around confidence for women at work. So what advice and tips can you give or any techniques on building confidence or feeling an inner confidence?
Sure. Well, I think this is really important, the kind of the self-belief beside it. So the not letting imposter syndrome get the best of you and, you know, believing that I've been given this job for a reason, I absolutely can do this. And I just need to let my best self kind of shine forth, essentially. So being your best self, I think, is really important there. And being able to identify when are those moments when I'm at my best, either now or in previous jobs or in my home life or, you know, my personal life. When is it that I'm at my best? When is it that I'm in flow? You know, when do I absolutely do my best work and try and maximize and, you know, those opportunities as much as you can? I'm a huge fan of Tara Moore, who wrote a fantastic book called Playing Big. And one of the things she talks about is visualizing your inner critic. So we've all got this little inner critic on our shoulder sort of saying you can't do it or you're a fraud and so on. But actually visualize it. And then once you're able to like visualize it as a little animal or not just a voice, but something that you can really then tackle and use that as a way of driving, you know, this inner confidence, this self-belief, because, you know, being your own sponsor, the first bit about that is that self-belief is crucial, because you can't communicate your best self if you don't have this inner self-belief. It has to come from you first. You know, I think, again, there's a great adage of teaching girls bravery, not perfection. I think it needs to start really young, but having the bravery to make the ask, so to ask that person for the coffee chat, for example. You know, getting involved in something, even if you know you're not going to be perfect at it. Nobody's perfect. Actually, often it's about whether we think we can do it. And again, something else that Tara Moore talks about is leaving good student habits behind.
Right, yes.
And by that, yeah, she means like being this kind of goody two-shoes or someone who has to prepare and prepare and prepare until it is perfect. And I think so often that, well, there is research that backs this up, that women want to over-prepare because they're such good students, so much so that they think, I won't change jobs, I won't enter fundraising now because I need to go and get a master's in fundraising techniques or whatever, you know. So once I've got the master's, then I'll do it. And it's almost as if we're just waiting for the next step. Once I've prepared just this little bit more, then I can push myself out of my comfort zone. And actually sometimes good is good enough, and just give it a try, trial and error, you know, making those small adjustments as you go along and having that kind of brave approach to just give it a try. I think that makes a huge difference. And in terms of, I it really resonates actually what you talk about of sometimes men sort of interjecting in the middle of meetings and so on, or talking over people. And that is much, much harder to sort of dispel in Zoom or Teams meetings. But I think there are things that we can do to basically to not apologize for ourselves. So again, this is Tara Moore's area that she talks about a lot in her book, which I'd really recommend. But there are these little things in our speech that make a big impact. So saying, you know, I just wanted to say, or I'm sorry, but, or, you know, this might be a bad idea, but dot, dot, dot. And actually that all of that is an apology. It's an undertone for an apology. And I think if we can try and train ourselves out of the habit of saying things like, you know, here's my great idea, but does that make sense?
Yes.
You've automatically downplayed your great idea.
Yeah.
By then asking, does that make sense? If you've got confidence and you've thought it through, it probably will make sense. And actually, it's about untraining those really ingrained habits that obviously not everybody has them, but just being aware of when we are using, you know, specific turns of phrase or specific words that perhaps if we can train ourselves out, it can make a really big difference.
Yes, yeah, really good points. And actually some of the guests I've had on the podcast before, like Viv Grosskopf or Caroline Goyder or even last week, Soraya Chemali, have all got great advice, as well as obviously Tara Moore, on how we can do that. But, you know, we're realists as well, and understanding or finding the energy to focus on these things in the middle of a pandemic, when we are, a lot of women are taking the domestic load as well. But it is remaining with that optimism. And it's great to hear, Amy, that you clearly have a firm belief that there is a brighter light at the end of the tunnel, and something that Jill also closes with.
But I remain optimistic, Jane, because I do believe that a good crisis can actually be a catalyst. And what my hope is that things are so bad at the moment from a gender equality point of view. The issues have finally become so visible that they can't be ignored. I hope that women and men and employers will take this opportunity to say, okay, we need to make interventions and change things because this doesn't work.
Both really interesting interviews, and both have very, very valid perspectives. I hope you will agree. So my thanks to Jill Whitty Collins for her time, and to Amy, and thank you for listening. There were lots of interesting perspectives, and no doubt you will have your own as well. Please do leave your comments and feedback. I'm really interested in your thoughts, so I might read out one or two in the next episode in a couple of weeks' time, when we'll be talking to women who have returned to work during the pandemic. See you next time.